are listening to Health's Beat podcast series on the use of artificial intelligence in healthcare. I'm your host, Sandy Vance, and whether you are a healthcare leader, a founder, or an investor, I invite you to join me weekly here on The Beat as we explore how AI tools are impacting healthcare. Buckle up, we've got a lot to learn from these industry forerunners who are using AI to change the face of healthcare. You are listening to the AI series on The Beat, and I'm your host, Sandy Vance. Today, I'm here with ZS, who is a management consulting and technology firm that partners with companies to improve life and how we live it. They bring together data, science, technology, and human ingenuity to deliver better outcomes. Today, I'm here with Adam Siskin, who is a leader in the health plan and provider practice area for ZS. He's been there for more than 23 years, over half of the life of the company. He's worked across healthcare, partnering with plans, providers, pharmaceutical, biotech, and medtech companies to sustainably transform their organizations and improve patient lives. Currently, he is working with their health plan and provider practice area, where he spearheads their work helping to transform hospitals and health systems. So you all were participating in the AI zone at Health this past fall. We're so glad to have you all there. I got to say, like a year ago, this is your second year. About a year ago, I had the pleasure of interviewing your CEO on the podcast, who talked about where AI is going and how the need for some guardrails and regulation is necessary. So I'd like to get into sort of what you guys have seen since that last conversation. But first, so tell me about your journey with ZS. I mean, you've been there a long time.
Yeah, I've had lots of different roles at ZS. I've led our Canadian team. I've led our European team. I've led one of our North America regions out of San Francisco. Currently, I've been with our payer and provider team for the last 7 years. And my focus over the last year has been to working with hospitals and health systems to really help some of the challenges that are in the provider space. And there's lots of challenges. And as you said, we do have a large focus on analytics and AI. You know, we were really end-to-end from strategy through to execution, but a lot of what we do kind of starts with analytics at the core. And so AI and the AI transformation that many of our clients are going through is a big part of what I'm doing and what we're doing as a firm these days.
You have a background in, is it actuarial science or analytics?
I do have a background in actuarial science. I don't always like to admit that, but you brought it up.
Well, I think that it's an interesting skill set to bring to the table as we try to figure out what health data in the future is going to look like, right?
Well, and also just understanding risk. I mean, you talked about what Pratap, our MD, talked about a year ago, was around some of the risks and regulations around AI and where the future is going. So risk is an important part of what any somebody with an actuarial background would talk about. I'm much more interested now in how do you drive impact through AI and where can you drive impact with AI, but risk and assessment of risk is an important part of that. So the background is a useful background, even though, as I said, I always like to admit to it.
So are you afraid it's going to make you sound like a nerd?
Well, something like that.
No, it takes a really smart person to get through the actuarial stuff, I think. So, all right. So what do you think are kind of the biggest challenges that you all are tackling right now with payers and providers? And how is AI facilitating the solutions that you all are offering?
Yeah, I mean, I think the ever-increasing journey to drive bottom-line profitability is the most important thing that our payer and provider clients are facing. You know, the profitability of our healthcare payers now has been at an all-time low for the last few years, and that is getting more challenging, not easier. Providers are always trying to figure out how to manage and create a more sustainable business. So both payers and providers are trying to drive sustainability. And so that sustainability is ripe for transformation. And AI is an amazing tool. And AI is such a broad statement. We can talk about some of the specifics around what use cases are going to be the most impactful. But as a platform and as a source of innovation, we haven't seen anything like this for 20 years that can truly drive a difference in how you work as an organization, which can help to create a much more sustainable business.
Yeah. So you said payers are at an all-time low for profitability in the last 5 years. I think that would surprise a lot of people. Why is that?
Well, coming out of COVID, the cost in the system was dramatically different than what people were expecting. And so that changed adjustment factors and MLRs. And so all of that has led to a challenge of trying to create a more sustainable business. So there are some payer organizations that are thriving, but many are trying to figure out where to focus, where to play so that they can create a much more, as I said, a more sustainable business. And so it is a challenging environment. It is, the commercial space is a more sustainable business than it is in the government space. And so trying to figure out where do you play in the government space and what niches can you find that can create a more sustainable business? I mean, these are things that our payer clients are trying to figure out all the time.
Yeah. How does ZS help these payers figure this out?
Well, I think as I mentioned, thinking about how you can take analytics and use that to drive a difference in how you are operating, right? How can you create a more sustainable business? Whether that's, thinking about payers, how do you use AI to drive greater membership? Or how do you reduce costs, the administrative burden that comes with payer organization? On the provider side, again, the administrative burden is often what you're seeing as getting in the way of true patient and integrated patient care. There's lots of different ways for AI to lead to a better outcome for patients. But what people are focusing on right now at the hospital setting are mostly around administrative burden. And so that administrative burden, a good example of that is, let's say that you are focusing on clinical trials. Clinical trials takes a ton of time and effort to get off the ground, sometimes months to get a trial into the market. And that's for an investigator-initiated trial, right? Those are coming out of the hospitals as opposed to those coming from pharmaceutical sponsors. And so one of the reasons is because a lot of paperwork. Well, that paperwork, there's probably 20 documents that you need to get in place to either get a trial off the ground or operate it on a regular basis. Things like IRB submissions, informed consent forms, things like that. That's a great example of a very time-intensive process that can be automated through generative AI solutions. These documents should be standardized. They're often not. They're often changed by what the investigator, they have in their inbox and what they have to draw from. But these can be standardized. They can be automated. The same way that AI is transforming the paralegal function, it can have equal impact in a provider organization without worrying so much about what that might have an impact on around patient care. That's all that's going to do is help to increase the amount of time that a clinician is spending with a patient as opposed to spending the time on more administrative tasks. And so that's a really easy spot for providers to focus on, because we do this a Future of Health report every year. It's a report where we're interviewing 12,000 consumers of healthcare and 1,500 doctors across the world, large concentration in the US. One of the things that we found through this report is there's a very large distrust of AI solutions.
For sure. Well, so I just was reflecting back on, I was at an HL7 conference recently, and one of the speakers was, I think it was from Carnegie Mellon. He was talking about how AI in healthcare can only move at the speed of trust. We can only implement these solutions at the speed in which both the implementers, the provider and payer organizations that need the tools, and the patients will trust them with their information. And so I think that it's a challenge for us right now, because I think that those of us who have worked in healthcare data for a long time and can sort of see how this stuff is working, trust it maybe a little faster. Right. And especially with these low hanging fruit, like the administrative tasks that you're talking about are easy things to automate, and they're low risk things to automate. And they make a ginormous impact in efficiency of processing things. I mean, you mentioned the inbox of the clinical research, of folks. And it's interesting that so much of that data is being transacted via spreadsheets, forms, and email instead of APIs that are standardized and using these various automation tools. So yeah. So it sounds like what your Future of Health report has confirmed.
Well, the trust factor, if you want some data behind that trust factor, okay. What's really interesting is in the US, the percentage of physicians that trust AI, just a broad question that we ask is, what percentage of you do you trust AI? And so less than 40%, 38% of physicians said that they trust AI, broad statement. Now, that sounds low, but it's hard to to benchmark that. If you ask the same physicians in India what their trust of AI is, it's 97%. 97% versus 38% in the US. And in China, it's 80%. In Japan, it's 60% or so. In the UK, it's higher than the US also. It's around 50%. And so it's interesting that the US actually has the lowest amount of trust of AI. And so what does that mean? It means that a lot of the innovation that's going to be happening is happening where the trust is greatest, right? So that's where a lot of the innovation is happening in India and China. And so whereas the US is historically a huge driver of innovation, here, because of that distrust, you're seeing a lot of the innovation coming from elsewhere. And, you know, how do you overcome that trust factor? Well, in places like India or China, the reason why that trust factor is higher is out of necessity in many cases, right? So in rural populations or just because of how healthcare is delivered, there's a starting point of distrust of the healthcare system. And so AI is a way of bringing the healthcare system more directly to the patient. Whereas in the US, there is the trust in the technology, not a distrust of the physician. And so that's one of the things to overcome, which is how do you help to use a physician and an AI solution augmented together to deliver a better patient experience? So you talked about where to focus. Administrative tasks are the easiest thing to start with, right? Because trust isn't a huge barrier when you're just trying to reduce the amount of notes that you're trying to take for a patient-physician interaction. So note taking, note summarization, that's a really easy place to start. Talked about clinical trial document authoring, another easy place to start. As providers progress around their AI maturity, then it starts to get into areas like patient experience and then ultimately patient outcomes. Patient outcomes is going to be the longest one to where you're going to see adoption because the trust factor around earlier diagnosis. There's lots of algorithms that can help with earlier diagnosis. There's lots of algorithms that can help with delivering better patient outcomes. Again, you're seeing in India, Apollo, one of the largest providers in India, they use an AI tool to help with their cardiovascular disease risk assessment. That is how they diagnose patients. That is not done in the US. And so that could lead to better outcomes, but it'll take a lot longer to overcome the trust barriers.
Yeah. So it's surprising that if they have implemented that successfully, that no one's in the US even overlaying that. Like, it seems like they could implement it and not have it be the primary method of diagnosis, but that it would still catch a lot of the undiagnosed patients.
And as long as the physician, as long as the clinician, whether it's a researcher or whether it's a primary care physician, as long as that physician is in the middle, I think that is where healthcare needs to go to make sure that, again, it's an augmented solution. Again, physicians, there's a lot of distrust right now in what am I going to look at? And so I might disregard a prompt. If an AI tool is going to be giving me that prompt, I might disregard that if I'm a clinician in the US, whereas in India, I might require it. To help with my with the care of the patients that I'm dealing with.
So this future of health report that you're talking about, is this something that ZS publishes for the broader public consumption, or is it available somewhere?
It is available on our website. If you're wanting to take a look at it, it's they said it's a comprehensive report. Lots of other, not just AI. It's lots of information around the burden that physicians are facing right now. The perception of healthcare that consumers of healthcare have. That's a really interesting data around what percentage of consumers believe that their interaction with clinicians is a positive interaction. One of the things that's interesting is, you know, not surprising, consumers of healthcare are not having a very positive experience with the healthcare system. I think it's something along the lines of 32% of patients feel cared for. And that was from in the US. Compare that to the same question around how physicians estimate that their patients feel cared for. 79% of US doctors believe that their patients are being cared for. That's a huge gap. And that drives a lot of differences in how healthcare is delivered. And so why does that gap exist? One of the things that we find in the report is about a third of the consumer's time is with a clinician. Two-thirds is not. It's travel time. It's navigating a healthcare system. It's navigating payment. It's two-thirds of their time is not in the care of clinicians. And so clinicians see a different experience. They just see the 100% of time that they spend with the patient, right? They see the they see that 32% and they think it's a lot more, right? And so there's that gap in understanding around what the overall healthcare experience is for a consumer of healthcare. And so that leads to this difference in perceptions. And so what does that mean? It means that it's going to be hard for a clinician to fix this experience because they don't see the entire journey.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was going to ask, like, how do you guys help providers overcome that or close that gap? Because the perception, obviously, to your point, the providers aren't seeing the whole story. So how is it a education issue, like a patient education issue, or are there, you know, ways to fix this?
Or other stakeholders in the mix that are more responsible for the rest of the journey, right? So payers, they need to make the reimbursement process a more streamlined process, right? You need to think about your member experience, and that when a payer is thinking about a patient or a member, they're thinking about their entire journey. They need to help to drive a better experience for that overall journey. And so a payer may be in a better position to help improve the overall experience of a patient engaging with their healthcare providers. It may be other applications in the market. So talking about the health conference, I mean, there were a couple hundred vendors who were looking at some solutions that were more direct to consumers or direct to patients. So some of those solutions may be better solutions than others, but there's a number of different stakeholders in the overall patient experience and patient journey that need to help solve this problem collectively without actually speaking to each other.
So at what point do you think we'll see that tip in, you know, the investment is a no-brainer? So I think we see that with technology, like, you know, EMRs at first, it was like, well, they're way too expensive and they're just not giving enough value. But I think that over time, the value goes up, up, up. And then eventually everybody goes, yeah, duh, we need to do this. Like, do you see an inflection point with this or know what that might look like?
I'd love to be able to tell you I do. I don't. If I knew the answer to that, I'd be selling a lot of that knowledge to lots of different people. I don't know the answer yet. What's the tipping point? I mean, trust is the big barrier, right? We talked about that. Overcoming that trust barrier, when you start to see the data that suggests that physician adoption of AI tools and their associated trust goes up, when you start to see that going up, that'll be a tipping point. Or at least that'll be an early indicator that we're at that tipping point. When you start to see AI tools being used for patient experience and patient outcomes as opposed to just administrative tasks, that will be another signal. When you start to see that adoption across hospitals in the US, that will signal a tipping point. I mean, it's like any new technology or transformation, it happens through early adopters, and those early adopters lead to champions, and those champions lead to others in the industry saying, hey, we should do what Mayo is doing or whoever it is doing it. And so those stories lead to adoption. It just takes time. I wish I could tell you the date.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be fantastic? You're like, I would not be on your podcast, Sandy Vance, if I had those answers. So what are what's your favorite advice to give to payers and providers as you're out there working with CIOs and CEOs of these organizations to help them move this forward?
Anybody can build an AI tool. AI tools are very easy to build these days. It does not take very much time and effort. And there's lots of vendors, as I said, coming from health, there were probably something in the neighborhood of 200 to 300 vendors selling an AI solution with another 50 top talks on AI. And so everybody's got an AI solution. The difference between a successful AI solution and an unsuccessful AI solution is the execution of that solution, not the algorithms. Right? Anybody can build algorithms, but to be able to drive change in an organization takes a different skill set. It takes a lot of knowledge and change management. It takes a lot of understanding of how do you adopt and how do you scale that adoption. And so that's a very different skill that many of these vendors, they're coming with a solution, a product. They're not coming with an approach to adopt and to scale. What are the right objectives that you need to put in place into an organization? How do you create champions? How do you take those champions and get that word across the organization? How do you remove the barriers that are naturally going to come up along the way or across any kind of adoption? How do you tie reports so that you can visualize that adoption and see where things are working, where things are not working, so that you can intervene at the right time? How do you have a constant training program in place and an always-on program so that clinicians or other healthcare professionals or consumers of healthcare, so that they can see what is working and what's not working? And so all of this is a much more complex solution as opposed to an algorithm.
It's so, I sort of liken it to when we were implementing EHRs originally, where we had to really challenge the users to imagine what the tool can do and then figure out what your workflows should be, not just automate what you're currently doing on paper, because it, the tool enables a whole bunch more stuff and functionality. And I think it's the similar. I mean, obviously, this is a much, I think, bigger transition. But do you see, Adam, that there will be sort of a wave of implementers and that sort of third-party man in the middle that can help organizations really evaluate what value they're trying to get, what their existing processes are, all of this change management piece that you're talking about? Like, I, in my experience, I think it's really hard for a product company to get the MVP right and come out with this perfect, fantastic product and be able to do all of that implementation stream, at least to be able to do both really well.
That's right. Yeah, I think that that's absolutely right. And that's where organizations like ZS and other consulting firms, where you are bringing both product development skills, whether it's our own product or whether it's somebody else's product, but tying those product management skills to change management skills. And so to your point, like an EHR adoption, it needs to be integrated into the workflow. Well, that is how an AI solution is going to be adopted as well. I mean, one of the things that we're doing right now, back to the clinical trial space, is building a clinical trial matching solution. And so there are other clinical trial matching solutions that are in place, but they are not integrated into the workflow the way that they need to be integrated into the workflow. They're relatively simplistic solutions focusing on the algorithms as opposed to the change management required, which is a more of a customized ad hoc solution that needs to be customized for each hospital and health system. And it's easy to put the algorithms in place to say, oh, this is a patient that matches the inclusion criteria. That's easy. But what's hard to do is to say, okay, well, I know the clinical trial that this lung cancer specialist is focusing on, but how do I make sure that the 50 other oncologists in the health system are aware that this trial is going on? How do I make sure that those 50 clinicians are seeing, based off of the physician notes and based off of the coding that is put in place, how do I make sure that those clinicians, those community oncologists, see that their patients may be a good candidate for this trial? Right? It's a workflow problem. It's not an algorithm problem. I think many organizations think of this as an algorithm problem, but it is a workflow. And then how do you scale this across 50 different therapeutic areas? And again, that's a different problem where consulting firms are in a good position to help solve that problem.
All right. Any final thoughts before we wrap up here?
No, it was a great discussion. I think that maybe the final thought is this is a really exciting time. And like, you know, people to ask whether, is there an AI bubble? I mean, every site will now talk about, is there an AI bubble, with some hypotheses as to whether it's a bubble or whether it's not a bubble. And I mean, like the tech bubble from 25 years ago, it will look similar in that there's going to be a lot of failures, but there's going to be a lot of transformation. And so I don't like to use the term bubble because it implies a negative outcome. But there will be winners in this world. And as I said, I think the winners are going to be those that can bring change management solutions, algorithm, strategy, technology solutions together to really drive impact. And so I'm really excited about the future to see organizations truly transform because of this. And I think this will be definitely in the best interest of providers, but most importantly, it will be in the best interest of patients.
Agreed. I echo that. It's such a fantastic time to be in this space and just watch this transformation happen. Thank you so much for your time, Adam Siskin from CS. I really appreciate your support of the AI at Health Zone, and we'll see everybody next time.
Sounds good. Thanks, Andy.